farming strawberries was an itinerant business, but then settled down in coastal California, become a $5 billion a year industry. And that leads us to ask, why do farm workers call the strawberry fruit of the devil?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned in to the 1206th edition of the Food Chain right here on the radio station, or perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Valparaiso who are tuned in to the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, to be a successful strawberry farmer, one had to stay one step ahead of all the critters and nasty diseases that prey upon the plants and the fruit. And so strawberry farmers were itinerants who moved from place to place to place. Then, in 1961, a soil fumigant called methyl bromide was registered as a pesticide. By injecting methyl bromide into the soil, farmers could kill all of the life within the soil and thereby protect their strawberry plants. Given the magic of methyl bromide, as well as other pesticides, strawberry farmers were able to settle down in the cool, wet coastal valleys of Central California and build a multi-billion dollar a year industry. The strawberry billions now support a lot of communities and their people, including the many who cross the border to work in the strawberry fields. All the billions in strawberry bounty would seem to be cause for jubilation, and yet there is rumbling and grumbling. And so we pause to ask, why do farm workers call the strawberry fruit of the devil? To find an answer today, we are in the strawberry capital of the known universe, and that would be the coastal valleys of California's Santa Cruz and Monterey counties. We are with a former school teacher and, as of today, a published author of fiction. Her name is Mary Floden, and she is the author of Fruit of the Devil. Mary, welcome to the Food Chain.
Michael, thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah, great to have you aboard. Now, as of today, the release date of your book is today. So today you are a published author, right?
So it feels amazing. So it's a life dream to be an author.
So with respect to this whole notion of rumblings and grumblings, in your book, Fruit of the Devil, Professor, you're not the only one with the rumblings and grumblings about the industry. Professor Julie Guthman of UC Santa Cruz has also come out with a book called Wilted. And so why are we hearing all the rumbling and grumbling about strawberry industry right now? Is there something going on in the air?
Yeah, well, I have to say I've spoken with Julie, and her story and mine parallel one another, one in fiction and one in nonfiction. Why now? This is something that's been building for 20, 30 more years. Really, it's been building since Cesar Chavez began his grape boycotts long ago. I think that it kind of coincides with a general awakening of populations everywhere to the harm, the environmental harm that people have been exposed to from various things, from Flint, Michigan, and to even our own local water issues. People are awakening to the fact that they don't have to tolerate poisonous air and water and soil and food, and that we can make a better world if we work together. And so it's
so
reached a point.
You've been doing that for a long time, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
Okay. So how did you come to, going back, you're a school teacher in the Pajaro Valley near the little town of Watsonville, a beautiful little country school, surrounded by what?
Surrounded on three sides by strawberries. Very bucolic, very beautiful. And the teachers, and this was a small elementary school, K-5, all of the teachers passionate about teaching and kids, beautiful, very diverse student body and community population, local scientists from the marine science community, yuppies who'd moved there because the property values were affordable, migrant farm workers, wealthy strawberry growers.
So kind of a bucolic,
lovely
strawberry fields forever.
Oh, yeah. And the agricultural community there, very old. Japanese farmers were there from the beginning, growing flowers. People from Philippines, Portugal, all over the world, Italian.
From the Adriatic, growing apples.
Yes, and, the apples. So, and part of that diverse farm community that Steinbeck wrote about. But then when, as you mentioned earlier, the strawberry fumigants were developed and the modern age of strawberry growing took over, the apples, heritage apples were pulled out and everything changed to really be dominated by strawberries. But in my little school, the teachers didn't know anything about agriculture. We knew that we were close to the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. In fact, we worked hard with our students to help create that sanctuary. And we knew about teaching and about doing hands-on, inquiry-based science and integrating art and into
an literature. Sounds to me like you were having a really good time being a teacher.
We loved it. It was great. But we were sick all the time.
Oh, really? Was that what,
yes.
Was that what caused you to kind of wake up to the fact that there was something amiss?
Exactly, yeah. And, I mean, we had an unusual, we were a cancer cluster, unusually high levels of cancer in both children and adults. We were hearing over and over again from parents that they had taken their children to the Stanford University Oncology Ward, and the doctor turns to the nurse and said, here's another kid from Watsonville. We had multiple miscarriages.
Wait a minute.
That's true.
So the doctors knew something was
going on. Yes, yes. We had several parents told us that. And we had miscarriages over and over again in both the staff and in the parents in the community. The asthma was way off the charts. People were coming down with autoimmune illnesses. Kids had rashes that pediatricians didn't know what to do with. But we, as I was mentioning when we spoke earlier, we kept our nose down and we did what we were there to do, which was to prepare our kids for a wonderful life and help them reach their full potentials. Mm-hmm. And we didn't complain. But then at one point, a teacher came to the school, a young, fiery teacher. She had started out at a Bolt Hall School of Law with a full ride. She was from a poor community, first in her family to go to college, and she realized that law wasn't going to help her work for social justice, which was what she wanted to do. So she turned around and got a teaching credential. She got a job in the district the summer before she came to my school as a migrant Right for Success teacher. Mm-hmm. And she worked with a multi-age group of migrant kids, and they wanted to write about what they knew, which was being farm workers, and so she helped them do massive research.
Something tells me
she learned about the methylbromide. Uh-huh. She and her kids learned that farm workers die at an average age of 49 years old in California. 49 years old. And that the methylbromide and chloropicrin, which is tear gas, which they combined with the methylbromide, were highly toxic and so on. When she came to our school and everybody got sick as usual in the fall with these kind of flu-like symptoms, she said, everybody. Yeah.
So it was just a annual ritual. You go back to school and everybody gets sick.
Yep. And so people were on antibiotics and this and that. Nothing seemed to help. And she said, hey, see that plastic just over on the other side of the fence from the school? You know what that is? That plastic is down because they have fumigated the soil with with extremely toxic gases that outgas and drift right into the school, and we are being poisoned. Well, of course, when the teachers, we have inquiring minds, and when we heard that, we started asking questions, and ultimately even opened a very beautiful dialogue with the nearby grower, mm-hmm. who actually had a nephew in the school and a young family himself. And we were very excited. We learned so much about agriculture. We, the teachers, we sure. brought him to the school and sat in a little round table in the office and talked about our concerns. He explained to us that he had been actually thinking for some time about going organic, but that it was cost prohibitive. You have to wait years to be certified.
You know, maybe a little bit of background on the business of strawberry growing. And like I said in the opening, you could not be in one place for more than a couple years because the soil pathogens and diseases and bugs and insects would build up really quickly and consume your crop. So you had to keep moving, but by injecting methyl bromide into the soil, you kill all life.
That's right.
You in effect turn the insect pests and the pathogens into fertilizer.
Not really. Not into fertilizer. Not at all. No, you're basically growing strawberries in a sterile petri dish, but yes. It's outside in nature, and you're killing everybody. And so, you know, they use words like pathogens and pests, but no, the soil is a living organism. And anyone who knows about farming or gardening knows that care of the soil is your first primary objective, and that we need it, all of those living critters in the soil. We had a life lab
garden. Amen. But unless we need them, unless you can figure out how to grow without them, then what you can do is, if you figure that out, then you don't have to keep moving like you did in the past. Then you could settle down in one place and stay there. But you had to learn how to put up with the stuff that made it possible, which was methyl bromide.
Right. And yeah, it seemed like a miracle at first, but now we know that this this stuff is a killer. And why would we want a world where we're using poisons?
Because you can make a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I woke up this morning thinking about Greta Thunberg and that incredible, magnificent speech she gave where she said, "Shame on you. You only think about money. You don't think about life." And that's the problem, is that we have developed a really materialistic attitude mm-hmm. toward where we live, the planet we live on, and we're mining everything. Some people call it the R word, call it raping the earth
for all its worth.
It's not sustainable.
Yeah, when did you start banging on the war drums against methyl bromide? Was that as a teacher then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So we started with this lovely dialogue. We were going to have a community forum, invite everybody to the table. And the school administration...
Let's pick that up when we come back. We're going to take a quick break. Michael Olson, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. What's Eating What Today is that Mary Floden is eating up the strawberry industry with her book, Fruit of the Devil. And, oh my goodness, we have to talk about this book because it's really a fun story to think. The story of the book is a fun story, too. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Mary Floden and you right back. Stay tuned.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Why do farm workers call a strawberry fruit of the devil? Well, why is it, Mary? Why do they call it fruit of the devil?
There's not a simple answer to that, because when you talk about farm workers, you talk about immigration. And when you talk about immigration today, that's a big mm-hmm. conversation. And
there are many
situations that cause them to think of the entire strawberry industry as fruit of the devil, mm-hmm. not just the berries themselves, not just the pesticides.
And yet it is an industry that provides them with a way of making some money, too, because they are the ones that pick the strawberries.
Mm-hmm. But it's work that needs a lot of reforms. It's not a wonderful work. They're still living in very difficult conditions. Yep. If you go and see how they live today, it's amazing to think this is California in the 21st right. century. But how we started banging on the drum, you asked earlier. Yeah. So this was in the 80s and 90s. It was gradually dawning awareness because we were incredulous. How could it be possible that cancer, hair loss, miscarriages, neurological diseases, panic attacks in our kids, all these strange things could be connected to one source? And we couldn't believe it. But then we finally discovered when we filed a permit challenge and we had to research all of the chemicals involved.
What challenge?
We filed a pesticide use permit challenge for the three growers who were surrounding the field.
So this was an effort by the school teachers, right?
Yes. It ultimately became adversarial when the school district and the administration told us, you must not say the word pesticide in the schools, you must not talk to parents, you must not talk to the growers. And we said, what? And it took off. The parents and the teachers and community members formed a little organization called Farm Without Harm. And then we were off. We got assistance from the United Farm Workers and assistance from an international group called Pesticide Action Network. And we filed a permit challenge. And at that point, we discovered that there were 14 different Class 1 toxic chemicals being used right there around the school, and all of them deadly. But in synergy, they haven't studied the effects, right. The synergistic effects. But it's,
so instead of just methyl bromide, they have 14 different kinds of pesticides in combinations that nobody knows about.
Yes.
Nobody has ever looked at a combination.
There was a
medical study on that.
One study, a little obscure study we discovered from Tulane University that looked at apple pesticides, and they found when the pesticides were studied individually, they were carcinogenic, they were linked to breast cancer. But when they combined just two, they found that the toxicity was magnified by 1,000%.
And you have 14 different kinds of pesticides around a tiny little country school.
Yeah, including one of the things that upset us the most, in a way, massive pesticides to kill birds right on the Great Pacific Flyway, where all of the migration happens and the birds are stopping in our wetlands to rest on their way, you know, back and forth from Alaska to Mexico. And we had pesticides there specifically designed to kill indiscriminately all birds. So we were finding eagles, golden eagles, and hawks, and songbirds.
So Mary Floden goes from being a teacher to being an environmental activist.
A foaming at the mouth.
Foaming at the mouth activist. And, okay, so let's pick up your book, Fruit of the Devil. It's a novel.
That's
now,
right.
Like I said earlier, Professor Julie Guthman has come out with a book called Wilted, and you come out with a novel. Why did you go with a novel instead of a biographical sketch of what you've been through?
Yeah, because I noticed this was a journey that started in the 80s, and by 2000, I realized that we were still being told, there's no data to support your claims. You're a bunch of silly, hysterical women, because elementary teachers are mostly women. There's no data. You're imagining things. But we knew there was data, because we're university educated with advanced degrees, and we know how to do our research, and we knew that the data and research was there. But it was frustrating to hear, oh, we just need another study. No, we don't. We've done the studies. So I realized people need to know this story, and they're not going to read the studies. And, you know, I know that some scholarly people scientific-minded people will read Wilted, and it's an outstanding piece of work. But if you do the market research, you'll find out that most people read mysteries and romances. Those are the big selling commercial genres. So I thought, well, and I didn't even think it. It was just, honestly, it was told to me by my higher powers, you must write a murder mystery about this, because that's more likely to get some attention from everyday people who may be facing the same kinds of things in their communities. And this is a story based on truth, about real people confronting a challenge like this and coming up against the big corporations. And, you know, we're talking...
Well, let's talk about the corporations, because obviously you didn't name any, but what kind of corporations are you talking about?
Well, that was really interesting, too, and I settled down to actually do...
I mean, every good story needs a
bad guy.
A bad guy.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. Okay. So
I settled down to do the writing after I retired.
Corporations are the bad guys just about all the stories these days. So.
And I'm sorry, but rightfully so. Because it's not, I mean, corporations aren't people. Corporations are, we're told, have legal rights as people, and including freedom of speech, so-called, to get involved in our elections. But their mandate is to make a profit, and that's their algorithm. And so in doing so, they don't care about human concerns, but humans do, and we need
generally
to...
Generally speaking?
Yeah. I mean, okay. that's not in the picture. The prime motive of a corporation is to make money, which is fine.
You really see that these days. I mean, just in the last couple of weeks, when China tells our corporations, you have to mind us instead of somebody else. It's just, and the corporations, like the National Basketball Association, said, yes, okay, we'll do whatever you want, just as long as we can make money on you.
Money speaks, and part of the experience we had was the experience of being silenced, of being told, you cannot talk about this. And
did that juice you up pretty good when somebody said you can't say this, you can't talk about this?
Well, juiced up. It was more like we were incredulous. It was like, wait, we thought we were living in the United States of America, and that meant a certain thing. It meant freedom of speech, for example. Yeah. And so when we were told you can't speak freely, we couldn't quite believe what we were hearing.
Yeah.
But we went on the assumption that everything that we had learned and that we taught about our government was true, and that we had a Bill of Rights and so on. So but the corporation, when I settled down to do the research, I retired in 2010, and I started writing. It took me 3 years to write the first draft. And what I discovered when I dug deeply into methylbromide is that it is actually a toxic byproduct of the petrochemical industry. It's amazing when you trace it back. And it actually goes, we don't have time here to follow the whole path, but it goes directly to Standard Oil and ethyl gasoline. And the tricks that multinational petrochemical industry pulled when they had ethyl no-knock gas are the same tricks they pulled when their PR people tried to defend the tobacco industry.
Yeah.
And the same tricks they're pulling today. And they try to discredit the science. They spin junk science. They try to remarket the product under a different name. We had that experience. They tell people there's no data to support.
We need
another study.
Was the big evil company or corporation, were they like a petrochemical company? Is that what?
Well, you have interlocking corporate directorates. And it's a web.
Okay.
And you have just a few people who sit basically I mean, we know, but we know the 1%. It's a meme now. You know, mm-hmm. There's a few people who basically sit on the boards of all of the main producers of the stuff that we live with and use in our lives these days. But coming back to the closer into the strawberry fields, we have a single distributor of methyl bromide, and the largest distributor in the country, and there's only, I think, three in the world, I believe. And this product is, as I said, it's a toxic byproduct of the petrochemical industry. They figured out how to market it as a pesticide.
I assume it's a he.
Yes,
okay.
It is.
So
and
he is Mr. Evil. Then,
Mr.
Right?
Evil okay. is Sean Stark,
okay.
And he is the distributor of methyl bromide for Calgreen Pesticide Company, a very secretive company, and they stay under the radar, but they control everything. They tell the agricultural commissioner when and where and how he can monitor their fields. They pull all the strings in terms of how much methyl bromide to inject in the fields. And
how,
so.
To what extent are strawberry farmers reliant on the methyl bromide or chlorpicrin or what have you?
It's a drug. They have been told, and they deeply believe, that without the methyl bromide and chlorpicrin, the industry would die. It would. Mm-hmm. You'll die without this stuff. You've got to have it.
Would it die?
It would transition, which is what we would like to see happen.
Mm-hmm.
I call this book Cli-Fi. It's an eco-thriller. It's Cli-Fi. Cli-Fi means it's fiction that... where you hear the beating, the ticking clock of climate change coming.
Okay, Cli-Fi.
Cli-Fi. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
it's
climate.
Actually an academically recognized genre, although New York hasn't quite caught up with it yet.
Okay.
But yeah, and so...
Well, who's the good guy or the good gal? Who's that?
Well...
You have to have a good guy then.
Okay, I lost it. I wanted to finish that thought, but I can't remember where I was going with that now because I love to talk about the protagonist. She's a lot of fun. It's a she. So,
it's a she.
Of course.
Now, wait a minute. Would any of that she be you?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
So,
right.
Like most first novels, it's very autobiographical.
Uh-huh.
And so my protagonist is me at age about 36, only much better in every way. Smarter, stronger, prettier, and a much better surfer.
Okay.
So she's a big wave surfer. She lives in a little cottage on the west side of Santa Cruz by herself,
mm-hmm.
and she commutes in her really cool Miata convertible, red Miata convertible, down around the bay to Watsonville to teach in this little school, Prudenciana Elementary.
Okay, so then there you have the bad guy is the guy that's selling all of this bad stuff, and they have the good guy, which is the pretty young school teacher.
Yeah.
And now, what is the conflict?
Well, and there are multiple bad guys, and some of the bad guys are very complex.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I just want to say it's not
are some of them
completely
farmers?
Stereotypical.
Are some of the bad guys farmers?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sure.
Because that's your experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's a family in the book that's kind of one of the premier growers, strawberry growers in Santa Cruz. I gave them a son, mm-hmm. which I don't think they actually really have a son, but they do now in fiction,
okay.
who
so
is a very irritating character.
So everything is modeled after somebody then? That you.
Yes.
So if you're in the
names have been changed, yes.
So if you're in the strawberry industry.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's a way of putting together a story without, you know, telling the story without telling the story then.
I got to work with the author, James Houston, when I first started, and I was worried about the fact that I was telling a true story.
What did he say?
And he said, do it.
Do it.
He said, don't worry about it. Write the thing down and then just see what happens.
Now, if there really are bad people... What are you going to do?
really are bad people.
Yeah, and if there really is a Mr. Bad in the industry.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had to write the story, and I'll take the consequences, whatever
okay.
they are. Yeah, and I should mention, some people are frightened about the title, Fruit of the Devil. We live in an age where we have a lot of religious controversy in our country, mm-hmm. and there are people who assume that if I've written a book with the word devil in it, that I must be a bad person. And I want to just clarify, it's an extremely spiritual story. One of the main characters in the book is a Catholic priest, and I was a literature teacher. I taught.
So we're going to have to pick this up when we come back from this quick break, because it's getting juicy. We have a beautiful young school teacher, a Catholic preacher. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What with Mary Floden, author of Fruit of the Devil. My goodness, why do farm workers call the strawberry Fruit of the Devil? Got me. This is the Food Chain right back. Please do stay tuned.
So much to say, so little time to say it on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Fruit of the Devil is Mary Floden's first novel. Comes out today. That's really fresh stuff. And it must have been, how long did it take to write?
Oh, that's painful.
Uh-huh.
It's 20 years to gestate the story, but 3 years to write the first draft.
Yeah.
And I was holed up in a little back room of our two-bedroom, one-bath cottage. I took over one of the rooms, closed the door, wrote for 3 years without telling anybody what I was doing. It was a secret.
Uh-huh.
And then when I was finished, I looked up at the skylight. I mean, I had a calendar. I had plotted it all out. I knew when the end came. The end. I look up at the skylight, expecting to see the people of the world up there in the sky applauding and saying, "Give us your book, yay." And there was silence. Nothing happened. And I realized, oh no, writing is rewriting. I saw a very well-known mystery writer at an art reception that very night that I finished the first draft, and Laurie King, wonderful mystery writer, and I said, "Laurie, I finished. What do I do now?" And of course, I hoped and expected that she would say, "Well, here's the name of my agent. You know, give him a call." She said, "Oh, start your next book."
Keep going, girl.
Oh no, which of course I couldn't do. I mean, this was this story. I couldn't put it in a drawer.
So
I took another.
It's really much more than just a story.
Oh yeah, I just got to say, it took another, because there are writers I imagine listening. I got to tell you, it took another 7 years of rewriting before it was ready.
But it is much more than just a murder mystery. It is a murder mystery, but it's really your vision of what happened to the strawberry industry, this huge $5 billion a year industry, growing this beautiful red berries that just everybody loves.
Oh, yeah. And I've got to say, strawberries are wonderful. They're a very beautiful fruit, and they're nutritious, but don't ever buy or eat a commercial strawberry for so many reasons. If you read my book, you'll find out why. It's complex, but it's not a good idea for you or your children or the planet to eat commercial strawberries and support that industry. We need, that is what I was going to say about CliFi. So my husband, CliFi, my husband, climate fiction with usually a bit of a science fiction or fantasy edge.
Okay.
Which my story has both. But so my husband, when I was teaching in Watsonville, surrounded on three sides by strawberries, my husband was working at the NASA Ames Research Center in Atmospheric Sciences. And at the time I started learning about methylbromide as a fumigant around strawberries, he was on the ozone depletion project. He was working for the scientists in the world that figured out the ozone hole and what was going on there, the atmospheric chemists.
And of course, that is what has happened to methyl bromide, which is now illegal.
Exactly. So what happened was Dow Chemical, the major producer of the CFCs, was pushing back hard, just like the petrochemical is pushing back today hard against climate change. They were saying there's no such thing as ozone hole. You scientists are just trying to make a lot of money, which is ridiculous. They don't. So eventually the science prevailed, thank goodness, because without it, we would be not here right now. We would not. Life would be cooking. The science prevailed, and probably the most excellent example of human cooperation that we've yet seen on the planet was the Montreal Protocol, which established bans and systematic phase-outs around the world for chemicals which deplete the ozone. Methyl bromide was on that treaty, which is monitored closely every year.
That enforced a huge change then in the strawberry industry, right?
Oh yeah. Because the industry, the producers of methyl bromide, were telling the growers that without methyl bromide, their industry would die. They would lose the farm, and so people were terrified, and so they were angry. You have fear, you have anger, and so they blamed the teachers, among other things. It was a very scary time. It was extremely dangerous. It was personally and professionally
kind of
harmful.
You were kind of like the bad guy their book.
Oh, very much so. So anyway, the producers responded by telling the growers, well, the ban is coming. Right now, we are giving lots and lots of money to the lobbyists in Washington, D.C., to give us critical exemptions based on financial need to push forward that phase out. So we're not adhering to the protocol.
Don't stop it yet.
Right. That's what most do.
The thing about being a big corporation is that you have the economies of scale to go to Washington, D.C. and buy the government.
That's not a good thing. That's not supposed to happen in this country. But yes, it does. Very much.
If you're five school teachers at a little school in Watsonville, you do not have the economies of scale to go to Washington, D.C.
Yep.
and buy the government.
Yeah, and that's why this is a David and Goliath story. Mm-hmm. Margaret Mead, a small group of committed people can change the world. So the industry told the growers, you should start using more. So they actually stepped up their use of the methyl bromide and chloropicrin. They were doing more frequent fumigations and using more of the chemicals. And the industry itself admits that 50% of what's injected in the soil drifts. And
50% drifts
and drifts for miles. Yeah.
Right.
And it's sticky. They're aerosols. So anyway, so it got worse and worse. We got sicker and sicker and more cancer, a particular bone cancer that everybody was coming down with, including a dear friend of mine. Well, several of the teachers died, but many, many young farm workers. We had parents who were also volunteering at the oncology ward at our local hospital who were telling us, oh my God, babies of farm workers are being born with this cancer. And young farm workers, strapping guys, at 18 to 22 that should be prime of their health, are coming in with these bone cancers that are rare cancers.
So did anybody ever connect the fumigants with the cancers?
Well, eventually we did, yeah, as I said, when we started doing the research and figured out what we were dealing with. And one of the things about writing the story, I wanted, like you said, it to not just be a murder mystery. Why a murder mystery? Because I wanted people to turn the pages. And I figured a story about pesticides was boring. And so being a teacher, you figure out how to motivate your students.
How to keep the students attentive,
exactly.
Right?
So I thought, a nice gritty murder mystery. And I'll tell you that, frankly, I should warn you that there are bits, very noir bits, in this story.
Mm-hmm. Any good sex in it?
There is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. Got to have a little bit of everything, right?
Yeah.
Keep the people attentive. Good.
Yeah, but I wanted to write exemplify highest morality, very highest ethics and values, like Harper Lee did when she wrote To Kill a Mockingbird. I wanted those kinds of characters there,
right.
And that's where my Catholic priest came in. You know, just the best of the best of.
And if folks want to learn how the relationship between the beautiful young schoolteacher and the Catholic priest was consummated, then they have to read the book.
Oh, that was a dilemma. I'm not going to tell you whether it happened or not, but you have to read the book and find out. But
well, you can say it happened, but you have to read the book to find out how it happened. So what happened to the strawberry industry?
It's in process. So again, CLIFI, we know now that we have to transition every major system on the planet, every human system. We have to transition our agriculture, food production, consumption, distribution system. We have to immediately. We have to transition our transportation, our energy system.
Wait a minute. Let me ask you something.
It's in transition. It's
okay.
Happening.
Won't we go broke?
Oh, no. There is so much money to be made, so much money. Right now, ag tech is booming in this area as people are realizing, oh, we have to figure out other ways of doing this. We need to monitor the water more closely, for example. So also organic is much more labor intensive. But
yes.
We are looking at
and
also
not quite as productive either per tray per acre.
Actually, there's plenty to be had, but strawberries are a luxury crop, and you know we have gone into a kind of a society where we have to pull back, we have to simplify a little bit, and be mindful that maybe you can't eat chocolate and champagne every day. You know, you can't chocolate and strawberries and champagne every day. It's a specialty seasonal crop. And we have ages and ages of knowledge in agriculture to know that we need to rotate our crops. We need to move around.
Unless you use methyl bromide.
Which is not a good thing to
which
do.
Is a no-no.
But
because you're going to have the school teachers coming out.
That's right.
Using methyl bromide.
And by the way, yes, the young teachers today, our little group, Farm Without Harm, is now called Safe Ag, Safe Schools. It's moved all up and down California's Central Coast. It's several other counties now, and the teachers are very active, and watch out, because we're going to see agriculture become a socially just and environmentally just industry that will be profitable in every way to all people. And the planet and the people.
So how are the strawberry farmers reacting to your crusade?
Well, the one grower that I mentioned early on who we actually spoke with and brought over to the school, who had a nephew in the school at that time, a little third grader, he is now the premier organic lettuce and greens producer in the country. And I just spoke with him recently, and he told me that it was because of us, little school teachers, that he actually made that decision. And it was a very risky decision at the time. You know, we were told that organic agriculture was a communist plot, and it was completely impractical. But we know now that it is viable, very viable economically.
He was kind of the joke of
yes.
the strawberry industry at the
absolutely.
Time.
Absolutely.
And of the ag community, people looked at him and pretty much looked down upon him at that time.
Oh, well, now, you might be talking about Jim Cochran of Swanton Berry Farm, who also, he was the first to go into organic strawberries.
Dick Pichot.
Oh, okay. You're Michael Olson. You know who I'm talking about.
So, but these people accepted the notion that, we could do it without methyl bromide. What about those who did not accept it?
Well, they're still being poisoned, and they're still poisoning us, but I think their days are numbered. The industry, I mean, even pesticides aside, the industry is not going to last much longer because of California water.
Oh. It's well, Julie Guthman makes the point that there's a whole bunch of of situations kind of coming in on the industry at the same time. You have the pesticides, you have water, you have the costs of farmland, on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
And that's why she wrote a book called Wilted.
Yeah.
Because she sees the industry as being, you know, in a situation of wilt.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This is true. It's numbered. Its days are numbered. Our days are numbered if we don't change our ways.
Well,
but about the development, that's another issue that I take up in this story because it's of concern. We, the people working for a transition to sustainable, socially just, environmentally just agriculture in the Monterey Bay region, we want to see agriculture persist here. It's a very important. We have some of the most fertile, gorgeous soil on the planet. We are a breadbasket for the world, for the country. And so a salad bowl. We don't want to see agriculture go away. And yeah, the developers are licking their chops all the time. I mean, we have a little situation where I live on the west side of Santa Cruz right now where an important piece of property is being lapped up.
Well, we have a minute left, but I have to ask. Does your story, your novel, Fruit of the Devil, does it have a happy ending?
Yes. Okay. I guarantee you it has very best possible, wonderful happy ending.
And it has sex.
Well, it does.
And it has
some
good fighting it out, too. It has a bad person, lots of good people. And lots of excitement.
Yes, it does.
Fruit of the
Devil. I hope that people will enjoy reading it.
And it's coming out today. And it's making you very happy.
It makes me so happy.
Okay.
To be able to tell this story, and I hope that as I said that people
will
enjoy it.
Her name is Mary Flodin.
Thank you so much.
FLODIN. Her book, Fruit of the Devil. Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, cheap food isn't. Thank you all for tuning in.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.